You're listening to the Common Fan Podcast, a Husker football podcast for the common fan by the common fan.
Welcome back to the Common Fan Podcast. I am TJ Burkle, as always, alongside Matty Owens Sr. and Geoff in Lincoln. We've got a double whammy for you today, Common Fans. Two fantastic guests that we're very excited to, and we're going to get to here just momentarily. Real quick, make sure to check out the Common Fan website, www.commonfan.co. Subscribe to the newsletter, subscribe on YouTube, and you can generally keep up with all the fun and frivolity of the Common Fans. Again, check out commonfan.co. You should also, while you're on the interwebs, go to cpbeef.com and get this premium Nebraska beef product shipped right to your front door, and you can get 25% off using the promo code COMMONFAN, all one word, COMMONFAN. Raised and grazed in the beautiful Sand Hills region of the state, they've got every cut of steak you can think of and all sorts of other fantastic beef products. Certified Piedmontese, go to cpbeef.com and use the promo code COMMONFAN. Two fantastic friends of the program are with us today. Both longtime, among other things, these guys are both highly accomplished, but among other things, both longtime Omaha radio guys, Gary Sharp and Michael Severe. Gary and Michael, thank you both so much for joining the Common Fans today.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. And let me say this for Gary, no whammies. No whammies. No whammies.
No whammies. No whammies. Do you guys know each other? Do we need to introduce you two?
We just met recently online.
Yeah, online. Wow.
We were in a community together.
Yeah, there you go.
I swiped and he swiped and
yeah, I was gonna say you swiped right.
Yeah, that's incredible.
Good, right?
Yeah, right,
good.
Works.
Left is back.
I don't know. I wish I knew.
I don't know either. Yeah,
I would love to be growing up in this time. I tell you right now. Oh, I would have killed it. Oh man, to go back.
Listen, we have no doubt. We have every belief in you, Michael, that you would have killed it.
I would have taken advantage.
I don't doubt
of this.
That for one second.
Yeah, damn it.
Did you guys meet in an online community for Husker football? Is that what it was about?
I would swipe right radio Husker thing. Football.
Yeah, I see.
Michael actually helped me find the place that I live in. When I first moved back to Nebraska, I had no idea where to live. Michael directed me to some places where to live.
Very nice.
I try to help as much as I can. Gary and I have done we've done shows together. We've done football games together. I was just telling somebody a story earlier today. I was doing, and this wasn't with Gary, but this is a Nighthawks game. I'm doing a Nighthawks game in Vegas at the exact same time that Nebraska's having the game against Texas in 2010. And I'm watching the Nebraska-Texas game on a little on a phone or a TV to the corner. And we're calling the game in Vegas. And at one point, I yelled, "Oh, my God, I can't believe he did that." And Smitty looks over and he goes, "Yeah. What did you see from that 3-yard run?" And I was like, "Oh, it's the left tackle. Burkhead had just dropped the pass in the end zone when the sun was in his eyes. Remember that?" That was tough. Do it at the same time. Don't ever call a game and watch a different game at the same time. It's not a good idea.
Very true.
Touche.
I would imagine. Well, let's jump right in. I know Michael's got some chicken noodle soup on the stove. So
chicken and herbs. No noodles
chicken
yet.
And herbs. Yeah, we want to be mindful of your time. So, guys, we want to kind of look back over the 2024 season. And, you know, I think about it. Look, 7-6 is objectively better than 5-7, right? Getting to a bowl game is objectively better than not getting to a bowl game. And when Coach Rhule talks about it, you know, he kind of makes the point, well, this is what I do. I have a transition year in year one, and then year two, it's about 500, and year three is when it really takes off. But I think if you had asked him in August, and I think if you had asked a lot of Husker fans, you know, I think folks thought maybe something closer to 8-4 in the regular season was possible, you know, even 9-3. And then you look at the way it played out. I mean, there were 7 one-score games, right? And we lost 5 of those. The Huskers lost 5 of those. Obviously, they beat Boston College, beat Rutgers. Those are the 2 wins in 1-score games. Absolutely should have beaten Iowa, probably a play away from beating Illinois. So it's kind of like things were better. There was objective progress. And at the same time, some of the same old bugaboos kept popping up. How do we assess this season? Do we call it a success?
You want to go first, Gary?
Go ahead, Michael.
Okay, I would say definitely. And the biggest reason for the success, and I'm going to take you back to, we were doing a Big Red wrap-up after the bowl game, and I was listening to Jay Moore talk about the team and talking about, what Ty Robinson and Nash Hutmaker and all those guys and everybody, Ramir Johnson, meant for Nebraska as a family. And he was getting emotional. I mean, I could see him getting that win, the way it happened, with Ramir scoring and finding out the story about his mother and all of that, and watching those guys have all that joy on their face and former players with the joy of getting back and winning a bowl game. It was definitely a success. It was, if you're going to grade it, obviously it wasn't above probably a B, B minus in terms of success, but it's successful when you get, when you have a record that has more wins on the side that says W and less losses on the other side. And so it's a success, and it's success for a bunch of different reasons, but nothing more than they needed to get out, get over the hump, get to a bowl game and win the bowl game. So I make it a success.
Yeah. I'm along the lines with Michael that it was a success. Now it depends on how you look at this year going in. But there's part of me that says we won't know if the 24 season was a success until 25 plays out, because I think there's some lessons to be learned from this past season. And I break it up into 3 segments. There's the early part of the season. Then there's the last 7 that include quite a shakeup. And then I think you have to pat the program on the back for what they did in the month of December, because they could have just unraveled. You've got the transfer portal going on. Oh, by the way, you got a bowl game. The guys that, had stuck it out for their career at Nebraska, they stuck in there. They played in the bowl game. They won a bowl game, which I think is really important. But my thing going into this year was, how can they handle success? Because that was my worry of, okay, what if they get off to a good start and people start patting them on the back and saying, hey, great job. Hey, we turned the corner. How do they deal with that? How do they deal with the ups and downs of a regular 12-game season? And I think I saw my answer as the season unfolded, but I was encouraged at the end of the year to see how they dealt with some adversity again. So I think in the 1-score games, as TJ, you were bringing up, you have 7 of them. One of them being the last one was the bowl game. That's the big thing with Nebraska. Can you win in November? Can you win 1-score games? Did they learn their lesson in year 2 of Matt Rhule that applies to year 3 and you don't go back? Because this program now can't go back under Matt Rhule. It can't go back to going back to the Pinstripe Bowl. Sure. It has to go to the low bar has been set that it's time to go to a bowl game. And then what do you do with 7? Can you get to 9? And can you find that magical season when the schedule affords you the opportunity to get on a run that, because you're in the Big Ten, you're being considered for the playoffs? So I kind of answer it and I don't, because I want to wait to see to 25. And then I can go, 24, they laid more groundwork than 23. Yes, 24 was a success.
So picking up on something you both said, how important was that bowl win? Because I think about the Wisconsin game and just the collective sigh of relief. It was a kind of a combination of sigh of relief and celebration among Husker Nation when we beat Wisconsin. And I think some of that was beating Wisconsin in the manner that we did, but certainly some of it was clinching. A lot of it was clinching bowl eligibility. And so I'm one who believes it did make a difference. Like, I think losing that bowl game, it's funny how different is 7-6 versus 6-7. And both would suggest a pretty, a sort of average program. Right. But I'm one who believes if you lose that bowl game, the vibe among the fan base for sure, and possibly the team, is completely different going into 2025. And it was actually really important that they beat Boston College on a cold, rainy day at Yankee Stadium. What do you guys think about that? Gary, you want to take that one first?
I think all you have to do is look at the reaction of the players. I mean, we might poo-poo that it's a Pinstripe Bowl, and they're using that to sell season tickets. Coming off a Pinstripe Bowl victory, get ready for 2025. Get your seats now. I think all you had to do was look at the players. They were emotional. I mean, that meant a lot to them to go through what they did in December, where you have some position coaches that are out the door that recruited you here. You have no idea what, you know, your future looks like. And somehow, some way, they came together. And I think the emotion of the players tells you how big a deal winning that bowl game was.
Yeah. For this season, yeah, it means a ton. Do I know if it means anything for next season? Because a lot of people like to talk about that ramp up of winning in 24. And, oh, if you do that, then – because I've seen so many teams, and I've seen Nebraska teams, you know, have success in bowl games and come out the next year and not and, and poop the bed. I've seen it the other way. I think it means a ton, like Gary said, for the team. It means so much more for the fan base, because this fan base, I don't know if it could have taken another punch in the face. I think you're watching that game and you're thinking, Boston College is without two NFL draft picks. One's going in day one. The other one's probably going on day two. And they're not playing with those guys. And Nebraska just looks more talented. They lose that game and they lose that lead. I can't imagine what it would be like for Gary doing a four-hour show, you know, 5 days a week. I couldn't imagine just being in the grocery store and having to hear from fans. It would have been miserable kind of offseason. And also, I think it would have hurt what they did in the portal a little bit too. Having the momentum going into the portal meant a lot. Do I know if it means anything for when they play Cincinnati in Kansas City? I don't. But I know it means a lot for this offseason.
Yeah, for sure. Taking it back to preseason, pre-2024 season, guys, I think we have these all these ideas on what we think is going to play out for the season. You know, I think we all kind of thought, well, the defense will be pretty good. Kind of really didn't really know what to expect from Dylan Raiola, you know, as freshman, true freshman quarterback. But a lot of things happened throughout the season. What would you guys say, and we'll start with Michael, what would you say was the biggest surprise for you for the 2024 season, either positively or negatively?
I think, and I know that they had Ty Robinson and Nash Hutmaker coming back, but I had no way that I think they were going to be that good at the point of attack in terms of stuff plays. If you look across the country, there's few teams across the country that are as good as Nebraska were stopping people at the goal line for a loss or less than 2 yards. Those impact tackles were incredible. And a lot of people made them. MJ Sherman had some of them. The big guys had some of them. A bunch of linemen. Jack Bullock had a bunch of them. That probably surprised me. I was worried that they didn't have great players on defense. Like, they didn't have any first round or second round draft picks. And so I was kind of worried, could the defense pick up from last year? That D-line did, and I know the Indiana game would happen in that, but that D-line played as well this season as any D-line in the country, certainly in the Big Ten. I think that surprised me the most in terms of what I expected coming in.
How about you, Gary?
I think the surprise, God, it's if I look at the offense, I think the surprise was that the wide receiver room was not better. I think you knew it right away from the jump that Banks and Nair against certain coverages would not be great. I thought there'd be a lot more movement in that room. And you can kind of see now in the offseason they've addressed that. I just thought the wide receivers as a whole would be much better, would have much more of an impact on a game-by-game basis. And, you know, with the way making big plays, helping out their freshman quarterback, taking the offense to the next level – and it just wasn't consistent throughout the entire season. And I thought that was an area where Nebraska had to be good to help this offense grow with a young kid running, you know, an offense that just is not ready to play a big time, you know, big boy football.
Yeah. And let me jump in real quick and say something about that, because it really drove me crazy how much of the blame went to the wide receivers. And it did. It went from the coaching staff, the fan base, everybody was pointing at the wide receivers. And I get it. And I do. You have to throw into tight coverage in the Big Ten. You don't have huge windows. You've got first, second round defensive backs. You've got safeties who are some of the best players in the country. You have to throw the ball into tight windows. And there's too many times where the quarterback didn't give his big wide receiver a chance to make a play. Watch the last three or four games of the season. And all of a sudden, you saw Raiola starting to make throws to Banks in traffic and letting him make the plays, opposed to saying, I got to wait for a guy to be wide open, not making the throw, and then checking it down. A big part of this is going to be the growth of Dylan Raiola, no matter who comes in at wide receiver, if he's willing to make throws into coverage. Because if you're not to concede in this league. Watch when you watch any kind of NFL game, how many times quarterbacks throw into coverage? Those same players are coming out of the Big Ten, so you got to throw into coverage. That's something he didn't do this year a lot of times.
Yeah. I mean, do you think, Michael, just building off that a little bit, is that something that perhaps Dana Holgorsen, you know, kind of told Dylan, like, hey, you got to take some more chances or you got to be more aggressive? Because it was obvious to us, and we've talked about it, you know, the last three, four games when we had Dana calling plays, that Dylan looked night and day better from the middle, kind of the middle part of the season, and looked more comfortable and confident. I mean, do you think is that just Dana, or you think something flipped for Dylan, or is the a combination of those two?
I think he got healthier. I think he was banged up. I'm pretty sure his foot or ankle was messed up a little bit. I think his shoulder was a little banged up as well. But Dana, I said this when they hired Dana, just watching a lot of him over the years, three things were going to get better. One, the ball was going to come out quicker. Two, the X receiver, whoever your lead receiver is going to get a bunch more targets. And I knew that they'd run the ball better just because of his balance. So those, I think the bank stuff more, especially once Nair was gone for the bowl game, that's who the ball goes to in that system. You can look, watch any of those Texas Tech, Washington State, Mississippi State, Houston, who the lead receiver is, that guy's going to get probably 25 to 40% more targets than the other wide receivers. And so that made a difference. And then I think, yeah, I think Dylan established a little bit of confidence too with a guy like Danny getting the play in quicker, allowing him to look at the defense a little bit, be able to check his reads before snap. I think that made him a little more confident as well.
No, there's a part of the trust, which is encouraging going forward, because you could see, and Michael makes a great point about getting the play in early. If you looked at the beginning of the year, they were doing a good job of getting the play in well before the 15-second shutoff. And so it did give Dylan a chance to look over the defense, to settle down, to not have to rush everything. And then everything kind of sped up, and it was so choppy, and you know, they just kind of hit the wall. And Dylan kind of hit the wall a little bit. But I think when Dana showed up, you're right about getting the ball out quick. Being a professional quarterback, that's the other thing. You know, the transition from year one to year two is Dylan wants to be coached hard. Let's coach him hard. He wants to be in the NFL. Let's coach him like an NFL quarterback, but let's demand that he makes the strides to be an NFL quarterback. Whatever this past year was, great learning experience, but now be an NFL quarterback. And I think when you're a quarterback and you're working with somebody who has molded some NFL quarterbacks, that at least you don't have to Google their name, I think that goes a long way. But I also think they're on the same level of talking ball. And I think, you know, Dylan's a high-level thinker when it comes to football. Now you got Dana that is spitting knowledge, and I think they can go back and forth. And I think there's a trust of, this is what I do well, coach. And the OC says, okay, that's what we're going to do for you, instead of, no, we got to run this, this, and this. And the quarterback goes, well, I don't know that I'm completely comfortable with that. So I think the relationship is going to go a long way to develop their comfort level on the same level. And then all those other things fall apart. They ran the ball better. Offensive line had more trust in the OC. And eventually they got to score some points. So hopefully that all comes together with this long ramp up they have to 2025 when they get a whole season with them.
Love
I
it.
100% agree. I mean, we talked about it earlier on in an earlier episode of the pod of just something was just off with Dylan midway through the season. And there's no coincidence that when Dana showed up, things definitely turned for the better. So I agree with both of your points there. As a common fan on here, part of my shtick is these two are the real common fans, and I'm just a rational human being, for
You're
lack of a
very,
better term.
you're very common, Jeff. You're very common, Jeff.
So that leads to my question is, you know, I like to ask questions. Maybe it's not all, you know, sunshine and rainbows all the time. There are some, you know, some critiques that need to be made. And we're 2 years in with Matt Rhule now. Is there a specific area that maybe as a coach he's exceeded your expectations? And I hate to say it, but is there an area where maybe he hasn't had as much success as a coach as you thought that he would be?
How dare you, Jeff?
I'm sorry.
I'll start with exceed.
Either one.
I
Yeah, go ahead, Gary.
think he has exceeded in turning inside workings of the program around. I think having the roster whittled down to 105 will help even more with the culture, because there's less guys. You can't have some guys that hide or willy-nilly outside. So I think that's exceeded, because I think probably when we step back, he inherited some good and some bad. And you remember, he was committed to guys that were committed to Nebraska initially, instead of just blowing open the roster. So his ability to get guys all moving in the same direction on the same messaging as quickly as he did, compared to previous coaches that have come in and maybe inherited a you know, an unfortunate locker room, I think that has exceeded my expectations.
I think that he has done an excellent job in terms of hiring the front office. College football has completely changed from when we were growing up, right? Even 20 years ago. the head coach was in charge of everything, and he handled everything, and he was the number one person, and nobody really had a voice except for him. And then he started bringing in guys who were kind of like general managers, pseudo NFL style. They start bringing in player personnel people and all of that. I think the crew he's built, and Susan, was it Eliza? How do you say her name? I don't mess it up. But you watch her, she's in such complete control of everything that's happening, whether it be travel stuff or making sure that players are doing what they're supposed to be doing. And Nebraska's always been really good academically with their academic advisors, but I think now their administration, above what Coach Rule is, they're great. They're doing a wonderful job. And I don't think he could have hired any better than he hired for that. And it's so important. You watch, you look at, go to Alabama's page. Alabama's got about 150 people in that book working in the football program. You know, it's crazy. LSU's like that. AM's like that. Nebraska's getting that way. And if they allow you to hire them, you got the money to pay for them, hire the best you can. And they did that for nutrition. They did that for administration. They did that for the general manager. They did that at every position. I admire what Coach Rule did for that.
And on the heels of that, now the on-field staff, you know, the first go around on the offensive side of the ball was not very good.
Yeah, last minute.
You know, and it's kind of the when where Rule was coming from, how college football has changed, wanting to hit the ground running, familiarity. You know, you put together a staff like that, and there were probably some guys that shouldn't have been, like Garrett McGuire actually might have been a better quarterback coach than a wide receiver coach. But you missed on a couple of guys you wanted to hire to your initial staff, and so you had to move some guys around, and all of a sudden, that's how you start your tenure at Nebraska, and you're already behind the eight ball. But then you have the other side of it. If you're going to knock somebody for poor hires in your first go around, everybody gets a get out of jail free card. You would say that his get out of jail free card in 2.0 with a staff is kind of impressive. And you can kind of see a theme as they've learned what it takes to win in college football today and what it takes to win at Nebraska, what it takes to win in the Big Ten. So that would be an area which I think if you had to go back over again and do, you maybe would have changed a couple of guys. But you know what? You made decisions that had to be made, and now you've hired a head coach of the offense, you've hired a defensive coordinator, you've hired some new guys, you've hired guys that are good recruiting in the South, some developmental guys. So now you kind of like are starting over fresh with a new staff. And so I would say that would be one that was a disappointing, but now it could be one of the encouraging things that you learned a lesson. And that goes back to my theme of, you know, what have you learned in 2 years that benefits you moving forward? Because you get better by the mistakes, you know, instead of trying to repeat them again and ignore them, what do you do to fix them? And I think we've seen that post UCLA, that the Matt Rule is different. Instead of Matt Rule with a 7-year contract, guys, it's almost like Matt Rule has a 1-year contract and it's go time.
Michael, do you have any thoughts on an area that underperformed your expectations?
I with Gary in terms of his hiring. I mean, how do you miss on Bob Wager? I mean, you had to know that he had some of these problems off the field before. Apparently he did. I don't know how you miss with that. Garrett McGuire, who I think is going to be a very, very good, talking to players that he coached and listening to how they talk about him, not all of them, but a lot of them, I think he's going to be a very good coach, but he probably would have been a better assistant wide receiver coach because you got so many you can hire now than he would have been a wide receiver coach. That I'd say that was kind of a disappointment in some of his hires. I was upset initially that he didn't spend the money he had. I'm not saying you have to be. I'm certainly not the guy to say, hey, don't be frugal, because I can be frugal at times. But they give you 7 million to spend the 7 million. Go out and get the guys that it cost me 7 million. I don't want to see, I came under 1.1 million. Why? There's no reason to. Where's the money going to go? It still has to be spent, right? So I was disappointed when he didn't spend all the money they gave him on his coaching staff initially.
It's a surplus, Michael. He was walking around with a fur coat after
that, right? No idea what he was doing with that money, and he didn't spend it.
Outstanding Michael Scott reference, Geoff. You know, guys, both of you in saying that, though, to put a positive spin on it, you kind of did, Gary. I can't help but think of pretty much every head coach of recent years having varying levels of stubbornness, right, about not being willing to make changes, and some maybe until it was too late. And so the fact that Rule is going to go into 2025 with three new coordinators, I know, one of those is not of his choosing, as for, well, it doesn't appear to be of his choosing. Maybe there's more to that story, but anyway, his willingness to make those changes I think is it really encouraging. We've talked about it on this show before. So I want to jump ahead to 2025 and look ahead a little bit. If you had transplanted a Husker fan from, say, 1995, and you told them Nebraska's coming off a 7-6 season, and we're going to have a new offensive coordinator and a new defensive coordinator and a new special teams coordinator and a bunch of transfers coming in. And, you know, the season before that, we were 5-7. And all that change going on. And yet I think there's a fair amount of optimism in the fan base going into the coming season. I'm not sure the mid-90s Husker fan brain could comprehend the current situation that we're in. And some of that is just the current state of college football, which is totally different than it was 20 years ago. Is that 30 years ago? 30 years ago. Holy smokes.
Mm-hmm.
I think what I'm curious about, and especially because Rule is doing it in a college football landscape that he's never done it in before, is it reasonable for all the common fans out there to hope for the patented year three leap under Matt Rule? So not just 7-5 in year three, but you know, in his year threes, he's got double digit wins at Temple and Baylor both. Can we hope for that? I mean, of course we can hope for it, but is that reasonable? Is that something that can happen in 2025?
Michael, he's not coaching in the A-10 or wherever they were at the time at Temple or the Big 12. It's an 18 team conference with at least 9 of those teams spending as much money as any team in all of college football. So it's much tougher, obviously, to get into that top 5 or 4 in a conference. But do I believe he has the ability? Well, the number one thing you have to have, and Gary can tell you this as a Kansas City Chiefs fan, is having a quarterback who can make those plays and win games for you. You look at any kind of national championship games, you look at any kind of playoff games, who wins the game most times? Quarterback. Who loses the game most times? Quarterback. So having the quarterback is the first part of it. I have confidence that whatever team Matt Rule coaches, the defense will be good. That I can say, whether it was Carolina when they were bad, I watched that defense. They played against the Saints twice every year he was there. Their defense was always good. So the defense is going to be good, and I know the quarterback has the opportunity to be good. He needs to get in the gym, maybe do a little keto, and get in some shape. And then after that, I think he's going to be pretty good. I like a whole lot. Hey, look, I'm fat, but I'm not playing football for Nebraska and getting a bunch of money. So get in shape. And then I look at the offense overall. I like a lot of the changes they made. I like the young wide receivers they have. I'm always going to be curious whether or not the offensive line is going to be good enough. That's the one concern. But, yeah, I see why you're hopeful. You should be. And by the way, if you were a fan in 1995 and you were told all that, you would go back to sleep. Or whatever reason you were waking back up, you'd go back to that because it would be impossible to fathom, in my opinion.
Yeah. I mean, damn, did we get the death penalty and we're just coming back now?
Right.
That's what we think.
Yeah.
I think Michael's absolutely right. It starts with the quarterback. And, you know, you look around college football and there's going to be a lot of way too early top 25s that are coming out. And if you look, more than half of them will have a brand new quarterback, either one of their own or they got out of the portal. Nebraska needs to use having a familiar face at quarterback coming in for year two. Didn't go into the portal. He knows everything about your system. He knows the expectations. You have to use that to your advantage. I think there's optimism because Nebraska has constructed themselves into options. There's going to be great competition at wide receiver, defensive back in the spring. And I think that will make it better. I think the talent is slowly getting better where they need to compete at a high level in the Big Ten. It's still got a little bit of ways to go. But my big thing, and Michael is absolutely right, Temple and Baylor are not created like Nebraska. It's an entirely different beast. And you can't just go, well, in year three, he did this, this, and this. This is Nebraska. This is the Big Ten. So how do you go, okay, well, let's make it like year three at Temple and Baylor? I think Saturdays, guys, are where this program needs to take the jump. And not Saturdays with guys in helmets, but guys in headsets. During the course of a 60-minute football game, can you make the right decision when you're squeezed that leads to a victory or puts you in a good position? And that's what I'll be curious now. Rule doesn't have to worry about the offense. He will always have a good defense. We've never worried about that. He's got a guy that he trusts that's going to run the defense. Will he step back a little bit more from the defense? He's got Phil Snow right there. Does Rule's game day clock and time management, does that improve? Because if it does, and the roster has been improved, and you're thinking, okay, they've got some momentum, then that's something that if you put those together, I like where Nebraska is at, but Saturdays have to be better from the people in the headsets.
Yeah, clock management, man, yeah. Decisions, fourth quarter decisions. I can't get over so many of those that have been made. And I'm, you know, go back to Mike Riley in the first game against BYU. Since then, I don't know. Has there been a coach that's made the correct decision a lot of times late in games? I don't know. It's pretty scary, but I see it every single Saturday among almost all the teams. So it's not just Matt Rhule. It's just they all need to hire a 12-year-old Madden champion. They have sitting there in their earpiece telling them, here's what you're supposed to do. I played enough of these games. I know.
Yeah. Michael, I'm not joking. Just over the weekend, I don't know why I started thinking about it. I started thinking about the loss to Illinois in 2015 where the Huskers were up 13-0 going into the fourth quarter and had the ball still up 13-7 with like a minute left and threw that incomplete pass on third down. And I don't know. It just still makes me so angry.
It was the wind, remember?
It was the wind.
It was an RPO, but it should have just been an R.
Just keep it on.
Matt, I don't want to cut. Matt and Jeff have a couple more questions. I want to jump in on one thing you guys just said, though. Did we see, I think everybody in Husker Nation, most 95+ percent of Husker Nation still pretty high on Dylan. True freshman season, we saw some flashes of greatness. We saw some toe stubs that would be expected from a true freshman. Did we see enough to think that he is that guy that you guys are talking about or can be that guy in year two and year three and year four if he's still here?
Yes, but this is on him. This is on him to make the next step because Nebraska needs him to make the next step. I mean, if he's just the same as he was this past year, I mean, is Nebraska another 7-win team? I don't know. He wants to be good. He wants to be coached hard. I believe that he will do all the right things to get there. But it's on him, and they have to push him. And we have to be okay with criticizing the quarterback and not saying, well, he's a freshman, getting paid a lot of money. He's a big-time recruit. There's a lot of expectations. He's kind of the pulse of Nebraska football. And so he's held to an entirely different standard, and that's why he's here. He told you that when he came here. So I saw enough that now we get back into the lab and we work at the craft and we become a professional quarterback playing in college.
Yeah, I saw a basketball coach in a press conference say a couple of weeks ago, he goes, well, he's paid to make those shots. It's true. That's the new life we're living in. You're paid to do that. You're paid to get better than it. And I know a lot of us, I think, when we were coming up doing radio, you did worry a little bit about talking about college athletes the same way you talked about pro athletes or high school athletes. And now that's not the way it is. And I do believe he is the guy. This is stupid. And I say it all the time, but during the spring game, there was a flyover. And after the flyover, you know how they do it. The game, they bring all the pilots out and they line them up and they do it in a commercial break. And Dylan walked over and shook the hands of all the pilots. And I said, yeah, that kid's got something. He just does things right. And do I believe he'll become great? Yes. Is he what I kind of expected? Yes, in a lot of ways. But things like that little taking his teammates and paying for them to go to camp to throw with him during the offseason, walking up and shaking the hands of all those pilots, he's just a special kid, and he's been raised to be this. So, yeah, I think he'll be pretty good.
Yeah, I think we think so, too. It's just it's good to hear some knowledgeable Big J journalists like you guys kind of echo our feelings. Thank God that that's not one position we have to worry about going into 2025. We have had a lot of guys leave, whether it's through the portal or, you know, eligibility exhausted. So there's a little bit to replace there. But Rhule and his staff have been pretty aggressive in the transfer portal. Do you guys think they've done enough at this point to replace what they've lost in terms of players leaving?
I think so. The only place would have been, it'd have been great to get the New Mexico State offensive tackle to stick him in and have two offensive tackles you feel comfortable about. I think I also probably would like to see them, maybe after spring it happens, bring a running back in, another running back to add to the mix, especially a veteran running back. I think that would be pretty good. Other than that, I think they're going to be loaded, like Gary said, at wide receiver. They're loaded in the secondary. They're going to have to cut guys. They just are. Yeah. I love what they've done in terms of the versatility of the linebacker spot and being able to get Buda Wright to come back too. He puts another thing in the mix for that. I feel pretty good. Other than It probably would have been nice to get another big time tackle, which they're
Yeah.
the most expensive things in the portal, and maybe another running back. Other than that, I think they've done a great job.
I like what they did in the portal because they had a plan. It wasn't just adding guys because you're Nebraska and you can add guys and then you figure it out later. They definitely had a plan in the guys in the first go around that they've added. Now, we would all like offensive linemen, and we know that's a whole different world because you got to show up with a suitcase full of cash and then you're in a bidding war and it's how far you're going to go.
Right.
But they have taken care of areas that need to be taken care of. They built some depth, and I think, they're probably going to have 8 to 9 guys out of the portal class that are going to be starters on day one, but are not going to just be fill in okay starters that could be some difference makers. So I like that they had a plan. They had some familiarity with some coaches they added that had past connections. They're in a good spot, but kind of what Michael was saying, I'd be very curious to see how spring goes because you never know. Some of those guys that just showed up may realize, hey man, I want to play. I might have a couple of years I want to play, but there's no way I'm going to play here. I'm going to move
Right.
on. I think, and Nebraska doesn't have to beat a 105 until game one. I think it'll be very transient. And I think after spring, they'll have a good idea of, okay, we definitely need that running back. We need somebody to complement Emmett and Ives, where we're at with him and Parker and whoever else they're going to have into the mix. So I think then they'll go shopping there. But I like what they did in the portal. It's a plan, and it's guys that are going to be day one starters and less fill-in guys, that are just here to fill in depth. Guys that contribute. And another thing I will say about the portal, and we haven't even brought up special teams, I think they've done a good job in the portal in helping special teams, not just a holder and a punter, but look at some of the return guys that they have added as well, like Marshall from Idaho, who at Idaho, he said, hey, I want to do whatever. I want to return punts and kicks. And he turned in to be one of the better return guys in the FCS.
I think we need to get common fan t-shirts that say we would all like offensive linemen. Or maybe swipe right for offensive linemen.
Yeah, there we go.
Yeah.
Real
We
quick,
don't
sorry,
talk. We made
Jeff,
a point.
I don't want to cut you off, Jeff. Neither of you mentioned the
No, you're
D
good.
line. Neither of you mentioned the D line. Tons of losses there. You think they did enough to shore up the D line in the portal?
They're not, I don't think that they are as good next year as they were this year. I think they're more athletic. I think they have a better pass rush because of the speed and athleticism they have. I think a guy like Keanu Davis can be a star. I like the defensive line a lot. It's going to take a little while to grow into those guys in the rotation as the season goes along. Not as many stuff plays, but a lot more boom and bust plays, I think.
Yeah, they definitely will be a lot faster on the defensive side of the ball.
Yeah. Gary, the one thing you brought up, you did say special teams. Like, we try not to talk about it because it's so dark and horrendous, but in your opinion, it can't get any worse, right? They've got to get better
No.
next year, right?
No. You either want to be good at special teams or you don't. That's how I've
Yeah.
always looked at it. And I think
Yeah.
special teams are a direct reflection of the head coach because it's not easy. You have guys from different sides of the ball that you have to come together, that some don't want to be there. Others look at it as their way to get on the field. And once they do well on special teams, they don't have to worry about it and they go play. I mean, guys, we're going 7, 8, 9 years back trying to find consistent special teams play. And it has hindered Nebraska. So, now you get a coach in there to coach special teams, but look at the players you have, the philosophy, maybe it'll change, but it has to change because Nebraska's margin of error is so small in a conference where special teams are really good. Like you have good special teams in the Big Ten. And look at tonight. Notre Dame is really good in special teams, and it's helped them in a couple of games in the playoff. So you either want to be good or you don't. And I think Rhule wants to be good. We're about to find out how good he wants to be. Does he have a special teams unit from the snapper to the holder to the kicker to the punter that is good enough to win you a game and a half or 2 games every single year just because of field position done by your special teams?
There's no one in this state other than Foley's family that wanted Nebraska to have kick and punt returners more than I did. No
That's
one.
true. That's
I,
true.
DeGeneres Ward would love to at one point have a winner from the University of Nebraska that deserves it. We would love it. It's come close. We've had 2014. That's the closest we've gotten. I would love to see it. I put Barney on our preseason watch list because of the return he had in the spring game. Didn't pan out, but I would love to see it.
I told you this before, Michael. It's like in The Godfather, somebody has to answer for Santino. Somebody has to answer for DeMornay in 2014. That was your chance. That was your chance.
Look, what Gary said, as soon as Bo finally said, I'm tired of being bad at special teams, I'm taking it over, they were one of the top. They were number one in the country. Even in 2017, when all those things were going wrong, Bob Diaco fixed the punt game. He fixed the punter, right? And all of a sudden, they were playing better, and they had a top 20 return game. That's it. 14 and 17. Other than that, they've been in the bottom 30 of teams in special teams. It's incredible.
Crazy. That is wild. I do have one final question for you both. And again, thanks for being generous with your time. I don't see any smoke billowing out of Michael's kitchen.
Well, my wife had to go stir it and turn it down. Now she wants credit for making the chicken soup. So,
okay. All right.
Shout out Chris Sevier. Yeah, she gets credit for, she gets credit from all the common fans.
Okay.
And, yeah.
And that being the case, I might have one question after Jeff, if you guys have to. Okay. Go ahead, Jeff.
Okay. You alluded to it too. We made some additions in the portal. We've had a lot of veterans leave on defense. So we got our coaches in place now, assuming that everything stays the way it is. But you know, people can come and go as they please. Now it seems like if everything stays as is, which side of the ball do you think is going to be better this year, offense or defense? Mike, I'll let you go.
Okay. I'm just going to say offense, what I was saying earlier. I really love what they've done specialist wise. I think their wide receiver is going to be very good. They are deep. They're deep at tight end. I like it. I think that Raiola is going to have an opportunity to be and put up, you know, 3,500 yards and 25 touchdowns. And if he does that, I think it'll be ranked higher than the defense will. Although I think the defense will be good, like I said earlier, faster. But if I had to pick one of the two, I would say offense.
I'll stick with offense as well, just because Marcus Satterfield's offense, no bueno. And that was, you know what, we've washed our hands of that, thrown that out the window. The offense will be better. Here's the thing. They have to figure out how to score points. I mean, we're all enamored by, you know, hey, different formations and guys were running open and it looked a lot better. And there's that Wisconsin game, but they didn't score a ton of points. So I expect that to change as we go into the offseason into 25. But I do expect the offense to be much better and more efficient. And if need be, help out that defense. If the defense has a bad day, and let's say the defense gives up 24, 28, that the offense has the ability to score 31. You know, that's kind of what we're looking for, because the stretch of offense under Satterfield was atrocious, just absolutely atrocious. And it limited some guys that we may look in 25 and go, whoa, where was that guy? And you'd be like, well, whole new offense. And somebody who realizes what their strength is and how to use them then on Saturdays.
Yeah, finishing drive rate. Gary knows, I talk about it all the time. Finishing drive rate teams, both offensive and defensive, if you're good at it, you win games. If you're not, you lose games. That's a three-point decision or a four-point decision every time you cross the 40-yard line. If you don't get any points, like Nebraska did a lot of times, you're probably going to lose more games than you're going to win. Finishing drive rate. Finish away. Figure out a way to score six or seven, instead of scoring three or none. That's simple. Yeah.
Imagine a world where Nebraska's offense could win at games consistently. I don't remember the last time that happened. I probably remember it, but consistently.
Yeah, sure.
So, guys, all right, if you have time for one more, I would love to have kind of a big picture question here. And Michael, we've talked to you about this before on the show, actually, but I think common Husker fans, I think, you know, we watch things, we could have like conference championship weekend and we watch those teams. And then we watch the playoff games. And I think it's hard. Like, I think most Husker fans are big time college football fans. So you enjoy that stuff, but it's impossible not to think about, how does Nebraska measure up to these teams? When will Nebraska be playing in these games? And it's an insane, as we mentioned, it's 30 years, almost 30 years removed from our last national title. It's an entirely different landscape in college football. But I think it's fair to refuse to accept mediocrity still at a place like Nebraska. What is a reasonable expectation? If Nebraska is as good as they can possibly be in 2025 and the years after, what does that look like for the Huskers? I mean, you know, I think we'd all, I'm never giving up on 94, 95, 97 type runs. I'm never giving up, and that can happen again. But understanding that maybe that's less likely, maybe that's a little bit less likely these days. What is a reasonable, or what's a team, what's a program, you know, that is comparable to Nebraska that's had success recently that Huskers can shoot? Just something like that. What is a big picture outlook of sort of a higher end scenario that is reasonable for all Common fans to hope for? Either
I, I would say I would start off. I say I had an argument with a friend of mine a couple of days ago about how this is the first time in the history of football, coaching in college may be easier than coaching in the pros because you can go out and pick the players you want to pick and you can get them at any time and you can turn it around like this, whether it be what you saw at Arizona State or what you saw at any of these schools and or Indiana. And so I think Nebraska's opportunity to be great, which means contending in the Big Ten every year, being a game or two games away from being in the Big Ten championship, making the 12-team playoff or the 14th playoff or the 16-team playoff, whatever it's going to be going forward, I think is better now than it was even 8 years ago. I really do, because Nebraska has the opportunity now to not have to worry about necessarily out-recruiting somebody. It's out-paying them and convincing them to come here and look at the campus. I think if you convince guys to come look at this campus and you show them how much you can pay and you show them the facilities, they'll come here. So I think it's easier now. The ultimate goal is, one, you've got to get somebody to admit that ball was kicked in 97. The flea kicker, admit that it was a kick on purpose. Get that out of there. Get that jinx off your back. Yep. First thing you need to do. And then the other thing is simple. All you have to do is continually recruit quarterbacks at a high level. If you do that, you can be in the top of the Big Ten every year if you compete with the quarterback. Rourke wasn't a guy that people thought at Miami of Ohio was going to come to a place and win 11, 12 games. But they knew it by what he could do. You've got to be able to recruit great quarterbacks. If you can do that, you can compete at this level. And yeah. I'm not saying you win the Big Ten, but you certainly can finish in the top four of the Big Ten.
Yeah, I think a reasonable expectation in the next couple of years, you have to use being in the Big Ten. You know, the playoff might expand by another four teams, which opens up another slot for the Big Ten. And so you have to use the advantage of being in the Big Ten. You've got the resources in terms of financial. You've got the support. You've got administrative support. You've got everybody that needs this program to win because they have stadium projects and other things. And so everybody is moving in the right direction. So it's reasonable the next couple of years that Nebraska is right there in the playoff mix. And I don't think you should shy away from that. And that should be expected. Nebraska needs to start acting like Nebraska, and they have built-in advantages that other schools in their own conference don't have. And it's time now, if you feel like you have all the pieces in place, the right guy in charge, that those manifest and it turns into, you know, when you're talking about, man, do they have to winterize Memorial Stadium because there's going to be a playoff game in the middle of December? I think those are reasonable and don't shy away from it. And I think the people that are in charge now aren't shying away from it. They know they have to. Not only do they want to, they have to be better because there's a lot depending on the future of Nebraska football winning when it comes to the common fan, comes to the stadium, and just comes to the brand of Nebraska. You know, it's crazy. As much as Nebraska's wandered through the wilderness of trying to find a home in the current college football, and, you know, Notre Dame and Ohio State will have, you know, three titles in the last 50 years to match Nebraska, is Nebraska's brand is still pretty good. What's that look like if they turn the corner and they flip it and they're being talked about being played in the middle of December, not at Yankee Stadium, but at Memorial Stadium?
Oh,
yes.
Wow.
Sharpie.
I love that. Absolutely love that. So Michael, we kind of talked about this with you at one time before. Are playoff appearances the new sort of marker of progress that people cite instead of conference championships?
Oh, definitely. Well, you know, it's different than what it used to be was, what's it called? New Year's Six Bowls. Yeah. That was kind of what you looked at if you were the big time.
Right.
Now it's simply getting into the playoffs. And then from there, it's getting a home game in the playoffs or whatever else. But it's getting in the playoffs. It used to be, you know, winning your division. If you won your division, you put something up in the stadium, right? And on the facade. Now you're going to be putting up, you know, playoff teams or top 12 or whatever, however you're going to describe yourself that, but Indiana is going to put something up on that stadium. I know that.
Oh yeah.
I mean, look at what just going to the playoff one time for a school like Indiana does. Yeah. I mean, people are talking, we're now to January 20th and we're talking about Indiana football today, Indiana football, you know, and they're going to end up, and then you get the bump the following year from your additions to your roster. But also look at, we're going to live in a world where Indiana and Illinois will be a top 25 team this upcoming year, but Indiana is going to have that little bump, you know, and they've got a, you know, Cignetti year two, everyone will have eyeballs on him, but they're going to have that bump of the preseason accolades, which, you know, you everybody knows, man, if you start up higher in the preseason and you stick around, you got a better shot to be inside of that 12.
Absolutely.
Yep. Yeah.
Fantastic insights, guys. Matt, Jeff, anything else, guys?
No, just thanks for your time, guys. We really appreciate it. And you're now Michael's been on a few times, but Gary, you're now inducted into the Common Fan Two Timers Club. So congratulations. Very exclusive community.
Yeah. Yeah. So you get one of those like the five one, the SNL ones.
Yeah, we're working on it.
Get a robe.
The board of directors is we're talking to the board of directors about it. We're working on it.
We got socks right now, but we'll try and come up with a common fan robe or something.
I love socks.
Hey, Michael Michael shows off his socks.
Oh, we'll send you guys some socks. We'll send you some socks.
We'll get both of you guys some socks.
Yeah. Nice.
The board is kind of a stingy bunch of assholes.
But they are. Yeah.
Michael, Gary, any final thoughts from either of you guys?
No, thanks for having us on. And, you know, it's I think 25 is going to be a very intriguing year. 25, it's not the crossroads, but it seems like it's the chance to bounce up higher in 25, but you got to take advantage of the schedule the way it is and the roster that you have constructed. And I think most importantly, going forward in college football with the two teams that are playing tonight, you've seen injuries, 16 game schedule, you have to develop depth. I think the 105 is actually a benefit to Nebraska because their evaluation has to be better. Their development has to be better. And their core has to be better, where if you have an injury, somebody steps in. I think it's a fascinating time for Nebraska football moving forward with everything that is kind of relying on now go from 7 to 8 to 9 to bigger bowls to the ultimate bowl.
Yeah, just two quick things. One, something I don't often say to men especially, but, you know, thanks for the meat. I appreciate that. That was awesome. And then also, to chime in what Gary said, we're in a wonderful spot. Wonderful spot. You got two more years with a quarterback who many believe can be a top draft pick, not just people locally, but you listen to podcasts around the country and people mention that. So you got that going for you. Two more years with him, two more years of Matt Rhule growing based off what he's done in the past. Now, I think Nebraska's in a prime spot right now. Have some fun in 2025.
Oh, baby. August can't get here soon enough.
Can't believe we're going to the playoff next year, guys.
Many are saying it's really just a question of first round bye or hosting a first round game. That's kind of where we are. Yeah. That's what many are saying right now.
Hey, just make
I'll
the whiteout
in the game.
Yeah, make the whiteout at Penn State in late November matter.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Good call. Good call.
We'll all take the common fan plane. We'll go to that game.
Yeah.
That's what we'll do.
I'll try to cheer for Nebraska if I can.
That's right. Michael's a we are.
We forgot about that. Yep.
All right. Thank you so much to Michael Severe and Gary Sharp, two great friends of the program. Just a fantastic and thoroughly enjoyable conversation. Hope to have you both back on soon. In the meantime, common fans, as always, GBR for life.